Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. This is the first impressions edition from a hotel here in New Jersey, not New York. The Giants do not play in New York. In fact, neither Nate Atkins, my co-host, or I will set foot in New York on this trip unless something drastically bad happens. Or unless Nate decides he wants to go out after this, which I don't think he's going to.
No.
Colts lost 38-10 today to the Giants. It's a game that was I think the thing that sticks out to me the most is that it's getting worse. We're really going to be tested when we get to the categories later, because the categories for the First Impressions podcast were developed with the idea that there's some good that happens for a team in most football games, and there's some bad, and that you're going to be able to talk about both. This is going to be a really, really tough one to do that kind of thing. So, we're, like I said, categories can be tested, but we're going to plug ahead and keep trying to do it here. But like I said, the first thing that sticks out to me is just since Jeff Saturday took over as head coach, you can make the case, I think pretty compellingly, that they have literally gotten worse with each passing week.
Yeah, I mean, just take it from the start. Of course, they came out, beat the Raiders, got people excited. I'm sure it's the Raiders, but it was a win, which is what you're supposed to do in the NFL, is a road win. Next week, they lose by a point to the Eagles. Good fight, but, you know, came up short at home. Then they had a clock management meltdown against the Steelers, where they were right there, but, you know, did lose to a kind of mediocre Steelers team. And then, yeah, from there, it's just started – the wheels have really come off from that moment. And really – you think about it, they were down 21-19 to the Cowboys on the road, good Cowboys team. And that's when they really had their first true implosion moment as a team, where 33-0 in the fourth quarter, which tied the largest scoring margin in NFL history. And since then, it's just been finding a new way to do something miraculously bad. You know, the collapse in Minnesota. And then from there, it's the Chargers and Giants just kind of blow their doors off. And so, you know, what I wrote, like I do these 10 thoughts after the game, and I started out by talking about, like, I think the most overused phrase in sports is embarrassing. Like, not that many things are actually embarrassing. Losing itself isn't embarrassing, because every game has a winner or loser. Even getting blown out on occasion based on the team you're playing isn't necessarily embarrassing. But what's gone on the past month or so for this franchise is embarrassing. The collapses, the lack of mental toughness, the lack of poise, the lack of identity, the lack of scheme. I mean, everything has kind of come to the forefront. And I think the past 2 weeks have really shown that this team, all of a sudden, as we got further and further under the Jeff Saturday tenure, this team, like, everyone knows what this team is and what it's not. And there's no scheme. There's no identity. There's no pulse. There's no energy. There's no vibe to it. I've been around bad teams before. I've covered the Lions and Bears, as I've brought up many times. And I've been around bad teams that still fight, bad teams that still have a bond, or, you know, they have an identity where they've got to win a certain way, but maybe they're flawed. This team really doesn't have any of that. It's just becoming a very big indictment on really everything from the roster construction to the coaching staff to the owner to the directionless nature of the franchise. It's all just really taking them down to a pretty dark place.
Yeah. The Giants are generally not a good team. I mean, they're going to the playoffs. They clinched a playoff berth today. But before this, their last six games, they were 1-4-1. And they'd played some pretty good teams. I think they'd played three of the four best teams in the NFC over that span. But we're not talking about a Giants team. They'd been stumbling. And they got to celebrate today, and they looked like world beaters today on both sides of the ball. This is 2 weeks in a row now that the Colts have played flawed teams that are headed to the playoffs, teams that are probably not considered favorites, and just gotten steamrolled like they're playing the best in the league. So it's getting worse. It's getting worse. We'll get into some of this in the categories, but this is going to be hard. These categories are going to be hard.
They're going to be hard. I want to say one thing about the Giants that I noticed in the locker room. There was a lot of talk from Colts players about how kind of impressed they were with elements of the Giants, and not what you're talking about, that they're an overwhelmingly talented different level type of team, but just how much of a team they are, the scheme that they have on offense, the identity they have, the way Brian Daboll has schemed up an offense that's built around Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones that manages the lack of weapons they have at wide receiver and plays to the strengths of what they have, and how that all kind of comes together, plays complementary football. Like that felt like it came off to me as kind of envy, to be frank. Like this Colts team used to have an identity and a culture as recently as they had a culture to begin the year, and they had an identity, something they were great at as recently as last season. Heck, you could even say to start this year they had an identity in terms of being a pretty darn good defense that could step up in the late moments and believe that they could right this thing. But they're just so far gone from that. And so I think what the Giants contrast really showed us today, and Chargers kind of did this too, was just like what it looks like when a team has a certain way that it wins, plays within itself, guys fight for each other and don't get rattled, you know, if something doesn't go right. This team has just kind of lost all of that, and it's been kind of hard to watch because there's certain guys on this Colts team that I have so much respect for and everything that they're giving and how much they care, but they can't fix, like, the guys, no amount of Zaire Franklin, Bobby Okereke, Rodney McLeod type of players are going to save kind of what's happened to this offense and this team in general. And it's just been a tough pill to swallow for some of those guys who are fighting like crazy, and they just realize they can't do it.
Okay, here we go. We're going to try. We're going to start with the categories. We're going to make it easy and start with the easier one first. We're going to go with villain of the game.
Oh, there's so many. I don't know if that's easy. There's so many to choose from. I mean, I'm going to have to go with Jeff Saturday on this one. I guess my issue with it is that I'm going to go to a very specific moment that in the grand scheme didn't matter. I didn't think – look, the Colts were going to go on the road and beat a decent team with the state that they were in. But you want to see them, like, give a good effort. You want to see them lay it all on the line and, like, and have a moment where it looks like they could. They used to do that. The Eagles game, they used to do that, stuff like that. But even the Cowboys – but, like, that moment when Jeff Saturday decides to first go for it on 4th-and-1 at the 5-yard line and then decides to take a timeout, and I'll never forget Nick Foles turning and just firing the ball into the ground in frustration as the field goal unit comes on. Like, Jeff Saturday was brought here, and the big selling point, you know, he didn't have experience, doesn't have track record, doesn't have a scheme, doesn't have any of that. The big selling point from Jim Irsay was, like, this guy gets it. He will be a player's coach, and he's not scared. And that moment to me looked very scared because, to me, this offense has such a hard time moving the ball, scoring touchdowns. They've got 7 touchdowns in the past 6 games on offense. That was your best shot, was to go for it there. If you get it, you set up 4 plays from inside the 4. And if you can score, all of a sudden you're up – at least you're up 7-0. You give the defense, you know, a chance to do something. You give the offense a little bit of – you know, feeling like they like this is coming together a little bit. I just thought it was over the moment they went and kicked that field goal. And the explanation he had of, you know, we knew we had to keep pace with an explosive Giants offense, so we took 3 points.
Keeping pace with an explosive offense typically means you go for it.
Exactly. And obviously that didn't work. And, you know, he also said, you know, because it was 0-0, you have to take the points. Like, no, you don't. Every game starts 0-0. That came off. It's just one of those moments that symbolized how little of a plan there is, how little of a belief there is from the coaches to the players and the players back to the coaches. And that's how these games unravel the way they do. Same script for the Colts as the last game. They came out, it's low scoring. They're doing a few things. They can get blown out from the very start of the game, but the second it starts going negatively, they get in their own heads and it unravels. And that to me was a moment of letting the doubt creep in. And again, they keep doing it to themselves. And that, to me, was a moment where that happened.
Villain for me, I'm going to go with the offensive line, and it's just from a specific moment. Our columnist, Greg Doyle, did a good job of pointing this out in his column and making it the point of his column. But Nick Foles gets hit, hurt, kind of scary. He's tapping his chest and kind of writhing in pain. And Kayvon Thibodeau, who hit him, is doing a snow angel on a day when it's 55 degrees, first of all. Dumb. But he's doing a snow angel right next to Nick Foles, well, he's having, like, what at that time looked like a medical emergency. They took the cart out immediately. And Greg pointed out, you know, and a lot of you guys, listeners who are following me on Twitter and stuff like that, pointed out, where was the offensive line? Where was somebody coming over to say, stop it? He's hurt, you know, and get in his face and do something like that and protect him. And it doesn't make sense, because I know for a fact that as uninvolved as Nick Foles has been on the field up until the last 2 weeks, he has been involved from a leadership standpoint in this team. That after the Patriots game, that mess of a Patriots game, Foles could be seen sitting in the locker room talking to Sam Ehlinger and Quentin Nelson, which I think was about leadership for the entire time we were in there, which is like 20 minutes. It made no sense to have no one go after Thibodeau at all, and pretty disgusting from this team. Greg rightly pointed out that's the villain for me, and that goes for the whole team as well. Like if someone's doing that while your guy's on the ground, go take care of him. I mean, if you got suspended for next week, who cares, honestly?
And it's going to feel like piling on, because I'm going right back to the villain I just listed. But I'm sorry, if Jeff Saturday's whole appeal is to be here and he knows what it's like to be a player, he's a longtime center in this league. The team's supposed to take the identity of the head coach. And under Frank Reich, they did. They were this sort of calm and steady team that would climb out of holes. And, you know, maybe there were flaws to that too. That's where I'm saying this is a rudderless team right now. There's no identity, because you'd think the one thing they would do is fight and protect the quarterback and do everything they can to, you know, not let guys do that. And so, like, if we had a moment there where, you know, any of those offensive linemen had just, you know, even gone over the line, body slammed Thibodeau, or maybe there's a, like, they could have taken it too far. We may be having a conversation about, like, oh, you got to be a little bit more controlled, but it's very understandable in that moment. Maybe they even, it's even worthy of getting some of these. So these things are bigger than the play too. And in that moment, they were already getting blown out. That was a chance for them to make a statement about, like, who we are. We have pride. We're together in this. And to me, it looked like that moment symbolizes what the season is, which is everyone's just trying to get it over with. And I've never really been around a team as checked out as this one.
Unsung villain. I'm going to go with the defensive line. This is a Giants team that Daniel Jones has been sacked 44 times coming into this game. That's a lot. He was sacked exactly no times. I think the only person that got close was Buckner. The defensive line has been better recently, but they were not good today. They did not handle his speed and escapability well. They didn't have Unique Ngakoue, but honestly, he hasn't been the driving force in this pass rush for a while. Just not a good game from them. So that's the unsung part of it. Just they didn't do much. They didn't do much in the run game. They didn't do much in the pass game. Just nothing. A kind of a nothing burger from the defensive line.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm not going to, you know, I think performance-wise you could talk about Nick Foles, but I'm not going to do that on a day where he, you know, he's hurt and he didn't deserve to get that put in that position.
Yeah, the pick six is bad.
So normally I would talk about that stuff. So if I, you know, to kind of move in a different direction, I mean, I guess I'll go this is hard to kind of steer away from all of that. What should I say here?
I guess I'll dead go air with on the podcast. Dead air on the podcast.
I guess I'll go with the Colts defense in a way.
Just in general?
Just in general. I guess I'll do it a little differently from you. I'll go Colts defensive ends, and I'm talking about the contain they had on Daniel Jones. There were some bad plays out there where he got to the edge. Some of them were designed, you know, zone read, keeper stuff. Some of it, as Jeff Saturday was pointing out, was just him deciding to scramble. The contain was so bad today on a guy where that's the one thing.
Yeah,
the Giants are going to be able to do.
Going in that's what Daniel Jones is going to do.
You know, and there's just some. If you really go back and watch, there's some bad moments of guys falling down. Kwity Paye, Ben Banigou. It just was not like they didn't look prepared for that at all. Even though at this stage of the season, that's the one thing I think you should be prepared for is Daniel Jones to keep and try and get to the edge. In fact, you'd like to think that you'd build a defense game plan around keep him in the pocket and make him throw to these limited wide receivers. And they just – it didn't look like they had that plan, and if it was a plan, they didn't execute it at all. And he ended up having two rushing touchdowns, and that's what kind of turned this from not a competitive game to just a total blowout.
Now we're going to get into some of the hard categories here. Hero category. I'm going to do something here that we've never, I don't think we've done yet on the podcast. Daniel Jones is the hero. I can't consciously give a full hero to anybody on the Colts. Here I'm going to go Daniel Jones was good. Daniel Jones was really good with very little help at receiver today. Both touchdown passes, he had to scramble around and make a play. Several throws in the first half where he fitted in there. I was impressed. I don't know what the Giants are going to do with him after this season. I no idea, but I saw a case for him today.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and give it to Bobby Okereke. He had 17 tackles, which is crazy to think about. He had the forced fumble, which these are things that just tend to go unnoticed because the Colts don't cash them in. But I thought, like, you're looking for guys to fight and do that. That was a moment where they were fighting second half, first drive out. Again, second straight week, or maybe not second straight. They did this in Minnesota, too. They came out and got a quick stop. Like, they come out of halftime, and they're still trying to get this going, and it ends up unraveling.
I legitimately forgot that fumble happened.
Yeah, because the Colts held the ball for 54 seconds and gained 1 yard and missed a field goal. That's where they are as an offense.
I legitimately forgot that happened.
And I just, it's just a way to say, like, Bobby Okereke has been everything they could have wanted this year. Contract year, new scheme. He's fit like a glove in the scheme. They needed linebackers to step up with Shaquille Leonard down. He's taken on, a lot of that, a lot of responsibility with that. And it's been phenomenal. Run stopper. I think he's shown it all. Run stopper. Guy can punch the ball out. Guy can make plays in coverage. And he's going to end up going somewhere else, I'm sure, this offseason. It's a hard market to crack at linebacker. But if you're looking around, you need a guy that, like, can kind of handle it all. And I think that was an example of showing the fight. That defense was on the field, 37 rush plays, and just really tiring type of game where it was just all downhill runs and chasing Daniel Jones around. And so I think he showed some fight on a team that did not show a lot of fight today.
Okay, who's your unsung hero? I'm going to give you this first because I'm taking him ahead of time and taking the easy ones from you.
Yeah. Well, I'll go kind of similar to what you did, Brian Daboll, because Brian Daboll showed the Colts what you really need in a coach, I think, which is like a guy that can really build a scheme and an identity for your offense that can get the most out of what they have, even if they're limited. We heard a lot today from Jeff Saturday that started to get into excuse making about how difficult this was.
Yeah, I'm going to get to this later.
Yep. I'm sure that was going to be out there. But I guess to me, like, look at the job Brian Daboll took over there. The Giants were a terrible team last year. That was a team that people thought, was just going to be in a total rebuild. Some people were talking tank early in the year because they didn't think they had a quarterback. They didn't pick up Daniel Jones' fifth-year option. They didn't believe in him. All of a sudden, you have Daniel Jones out here feeling it. He's confident. This team is going to go to the playoffs, and they've got, they got Saquon Barkley, who's great, but they kept completing passes to receivers I had never heard of. I had to look up, who is this guy? And yet they kept finding a way to do it. And there's just so much respect after the game. I heard it from Jeff Saturday and Zaire Franklin and Bobby Okereke. They just were really impressed by how great of a game plan they had. And I think it shows you that is how important coaching is at this level. There's been a lot of talk this year about, bringing a motivator. We need a yeller screamer type. Brian Daboll, I know he does some of that in moments, but his greatest skill, the reason he got that job, was the job he did with design offense around Josh Allen, covering up his flaws and accentuating his strengths and getting him better. It's looking the same way with Daniel Jones so far. And as the Colts look around to hire next coach, I think that's kind of what you have to hope for. They're going to end up drafting a quarterback, young quarterback, should be a mobile quarterback. I think we saw the value of that today. And you need a guy, you need to take your best shot to find the Brian Daboll, the best version of Brian Daboll you can find, because it shows you that, like, sometimes you're not as far away as it seems if you get the right coach who can build the right scheme for the right quarterback.
Unsung hero for me, and it's based off of one play, just one play that happened in the game, Paris Campbell. When Nick Foles let go of the ball that Paris Campbell caught for the longest pass play of the Colts season, I thought it was picked. From where I was sitting, there were two Giants down there. The ball wasn't particularly directed at Paris Campbell perfectly to start.
No.
And Paris just ran it down and made a great leaping catch, something we haven't gotten to see much from him this season.
Longest pass play of the year.
Yep. And I think Paris, over the course of the season, has proven that he belongs in this league and he can play slot receiver in this league. I think in a better offense or maybe an offense that was more stable and less herky-jerky and yanking quarterbacks all the time, I think he maybe has 80 catches, a really good season. But that was a big moment for him. So in a day that it's hard to give a hero to, you know, unsung hero, I'll go with that. I'll go with Paris Campbell.
And I'll knock on wood here, because he's got to get through a week of practice. But his goal coming into the year was, he said, I'm going to play 17 games this year. And a lot of people, fans, got kind of burnt out on the injuries, got very cynical and with Paris, and he kind of pushed through that. And he's on pace to play 17 games. He's avoided all the injuries this year. He's shown the things he wanted. He's shown the main thing he wanted to show this year was he could be reliable, dependable, durable, you know. The year hasn't worked for anybody in this offense as far as producing and accomplishing what they wanted on the field necessarily. But I do think, yeah, Paris showed he belongs in this league. It's contract year for him, so it means a lot to him. And that's been one thing that's been nice to see. And it's another guy that really laid it out on the line, and that play showed it. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the guys laying it the most on the line are the ones who are in contract years.
Number of the day. I'm going to take this one right away. 91. 91 points is how much the Colts have been outscored by in their last six games. It's bad. I mean, that means they've been outscored by 15 points per game in the last six games, in the six-game losing streak. It's as bad as it gets.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of where I'm even going to go with this. I guess I'll go with three, which is the number of that's the number of third-down conversions the Colts have in the past three games without Matt Ryan. Three total. They're averaging one per game. And those three came today, to their credit, but they had a streak of 25 in a row that they did not convert. And you can't convert on third downs in the NFL in 2022. You're not a real team. And so I think that sums up a lot for them.
We've reached the interlude part here. This is going to be difficult because these are usually sort of the fun, lighthearted things. Game day observation. Do you have a game day observation?
None of them are jumping out.
I like – so one. Well, I'll kind of float my way in here by just talking about the experience of going to a Giants game. I really like the Giants fan base. And I don't like MetLife Stadium as a stadium, but I love the tailgate. I like tailgating stadiums, since it's a good tailgate stadium. I like the Giants' history. I mean, you get some great vintage jerseys there. You can go, like, you know, you can go Rodney Hampton if you want. You can go Harry Carson. You can go, you know, you can go to any of those 80s guys. There's people from every era, it feels like, that you could go to. So I like that about it. My game day observation today, and this is a silly one, but we landed yesterday in like the worst fog, and it was raining. From our hotel in New Jersey, I can see my room. I can see Manhattan. I didn't know that until this morning, because I couldn't see it at all last night. And a perfectly clear day. I've covered, I think, three games here. It's the first time I've ever seen the sun for a game here. Just a perfectly clear day, which it felt weird. It felt weird for me to cover a game in New York when it was clear, because every game I've covered here so far has been what we had yesterday, which was the dreary and gray and rainy.
Yeah, I guess I'd just sort of double up on that a little bit. I just thought, like, getting into the stadium, stuff that fans don't care as much about, but getting into the stadium was just so easy, the way they ran it. Tailgate scene there is tremendous. We drove in, sunny day today, easy drive, smooth in, walk right in, set up, and that ended up being the best drive anyone associated with the Colts had all day.
Oh, nice. I see what you did there. So the three football things that give me joy, I don't have them this time. It was not a good game for this. It was not a good game for this. I'm going to take this time instead to sort of zero in on the Thibodeau play. Thibodeau. I am normally fine with celebration, especially in the NFL and football, because especially playing defensive football is a just explosion of energy and emotion that's hard to replicate in anything else, and you don't fully understand what you're doing sometimes. Like, I did some things when I was playing defense in high school football that is not like my personality at all, and not the way I was in any other sport. What Thibodeau did today was really bad. And it's bad even in an era where you want guys to celebrate more. Like, you have to at least be aware of the humans around you. And he was doing it right next to Nick Foles. I find it very hard to believe Nick Foles wasn't making any noise on that field the way he was moving. And you're right next to him. You'd have to be like completely oblivious. I'm pretty sure he was touching him with his arms during the snow.
He said
after the game that he didn't know Nick Foles was hurt. That's insane. Especially since he was doing a nighty-night thing when he walked off the field, and Nick Foles behind him on the field, the cart was coming out. Like that's ridiculous. It was exactly like the Derwin James hit, and then the Thibodeau play that today are sort of the worst of football defensively. And I am a defensive guy. I prefer defensive football. I think that they generally, the refs are bad on defense. They do too much of a job of policing their hits. But the James hit, what Thibodeau did today, that stuff is the stuff that they have to get out of the NFL.
Yeah.
And he should be fine. Thibodeau should be fine for it.
And you go back to the draft, that guy could have been the number one overall pick. There was word of that until lots of concerns came out about the personality with Kayvon Thibodeau. I tell you, I spent a lot of time at the combine around people. That was a big-time concern. Just the manners and just – there's a lot of noise there. And, of course, it's hard to sort out that noise. But he's not exactly fighting that narrative right now with that kind of a play. And, again, like, things happen in a game. I try and give leniency to guys because, like you said, the game moves so fast. And with things like celebrations, it's like there is an explosion of energy. And, you know, and there's rare times that you get to have real fun in the game. And so game day – there were moments of joy you seek in that, but he just showed you, there's so many moments with that he showed you what he really feels about it. It was that he kept doing it, even though his arm is touching Nick Foles, convulsing on the ground, that he gets up and he's on the sideline as the cart's coming out and he's doing the sleep. He's doing like a sleep celebration, like I just put this guy to sleep. And then to me, when he, after the game, says, I didn't know that Nick Foles was hurt, okay, that would have been the moment to come out and say, I'm really sorry, I'm hoping for the best for Nick Foles. He should go to Twitter right now and say that, and say, this is a bad moment, you get excited making a play, but I never want to injure anybody. There's so many other ways to handle it, but the way he's handled it, and all he's done is show you he doesn't care. And so, yeah, it's just a terrible, like, today was such a good day for the New York Giants, and I agree with you, like, their stadium was great, the fan base was great, the history's great, they've got a great coach and a great identity.
Clinched their first playoff berth since 2016.
There's almost nothing to be excited about. Negative I can say about them, except the guy you took in the top five of the draft looks like a dirty player and doesn't care at all about backing off that narrative. Almost seems proud of it with the way he's celebrating and the nonchalant, well, I didn't know and it doesn't really matter. So I just thought it was really embarrassing.
When we get back into the serious ones, this is where it's going to get hard again. Too much blame. I have one here, but I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, gosh. All right, you go with yours first. I'll think for a second.
Frank Reich is getting too much blame for this game. And he's getting it from Jeff Saturday.
Oof.
This is what I wrote about after the game. Saturday has been doing this for a couple weeks now, where he's saying, like, hey, it was bad when I got here. I knew this was going to be bad. Like, what's going on now? It was bad when I got here. I knew it was going to be tough. And that's putting it directly on the coach, that coach before him that he took over for. It's been 7 weeks. Like, I'm sorry. It's been 7 weeks. Like, you had time to fix stuff. Like, it was not that far gone. In fact, they were better under Reich than they've been with you at the helm. Like, this team has gotten definitively worse. They've lost 6 straight games. And you got to own that. You got to own that as an interim coach. And to say that an interim coach can't fix something that's bad, I'm going to bring up 2 examples here. And then if you guys didn't read my column or my insider from today, this is basically what it is. But I'm just going to roll it out here. Steve Wilks in Carolina took over a Panthers team that traded Christian McCaffrey, got rid of Baker Mayfield, got rid of Robbie Anderson too, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Won 5 games. They came up short of the playoffs, but 5 games. They turned it around. Rich Bisaccia last year took over the Raiders in the worst off-the-field thing any one of us have ever seen. a player was involved in an accident that killed somebody. The head coach was fired because of horrific emails. Bisaccia was in a terrible situation, got the Raiders to the playoffs. Like, you can do some stuff as an interim coach. You can. It is possible.
Greg Williams went 5-3 with the Browns one year.
They've gotten worse. The Colts have definitively gotten worse. And to keep blaming that on something that happened, like, Frank Reich has not been in the building since early November. It's 2 months ago. You can't blame him. You can't keep putting this on him. At some point, you have to own, like, you were brought in here to turn something around, and it hasn't happened yet. Now, was he brought into the best of situations? No. He's got significant disadvantages, but he's coaching the team. These are his losses.
Yeah, and again, when they made the move to fire Frank Reich, what Jim Irsay said at that time was, it's not just the losses, it's how you lose. And they're losing in historic ways, and they're just getting blown off the field right now. And if you're going to come out as a coach and say, it's always been bad, it was bad when I got here, he's coming off saying, like, this is what was bound to happen. Like, you just lost 38-10 to a team that hadn't beaten anybody by more than 8 all year. The week before, you lost at home 20-3 at home when the Chargers pretty much were just running the most conservative offense in the world. If you truly believe that was what's supposed to happen, what you're essentially doing is blaming the roster. So I guess I'll take it that way. I think maybe the roster's getting a little too much blame because they're better than this. They just are. Like, as frustrated as people were at the beginning of the year, look, when they were 3-3-1, they were not impressive to watch. They weren't fun. They didn't look like a contender. But they're a real team. They've got players out there. They've got Pro Bowl players on this defense.
The defense especially has had
some
real stretches of good play.
They've got three healthy receivers that I think all have legitimate skills. They've got a tight end, Jelani Woods, who's shown flat. Like, you've got enough to at least compete. I mean, if they're losing on a game-winning field goal, it's a lot easier to say, like, hey, you know, we're competing, but we're a little shorthanded. That's what an interim coach should do, is make you competitive, try the best you can do, and yeah, because you're an interim, you're right. It's not likely that, like, there's only been one that's ever taken a team to playoffs. We're not expecting that. But if you're going to say this is just what was bound to happen, you're basically saying, I'm coaching the worst group of football players the NFL has ever seen, and that's just not true. And another thing I want to point out with this is that Jeff Saturday, and a lot of guys keep saying this, that they're down 3 offensive coaches. No, they're not. They're down 2 offensive coaches because they went down Frank Reich and they added Jeff Saturday.
And who has spent most of his time on the offensive side of the ball.
He said 85%
explicitly several times.
So if he's going to say we're down 3, you're almost saying the quiet part out loud, which is you're not suited for this. You're not coming in and replacing Reich. You're instead blaming him for not getting it done in the first place, but then you came in and it all got worse. So I'm with you on that. I'm just going to double up on that for this category because I just – It's just gotten out of hand. And I said this early on, I never wanted to get to the point where I'm like being really hard on Jeff Saturday because he got put in a weird spot. This was never really going to work if you're being objective about it. But you got to own it more than that. And you got to know what you signed up for. Like, you didn't have to take this job, man. If you don't like the heat, if you don't like being tied to the results, don't take the biggest job in a results-based business. It doesn't work. It's kind of gross to watch at the moment.
Do you have a too little blame? Is it possible to have somebody who got too little blame for this game?
Oh, boy. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think most Colts fans who watch it are mad at everyone, and rightly are. And I don't think there's anything to... Yeah, I don't know if there's – everyone I think is getting the right amount of – well, I guess – yeah. No, I don't think anyone's getting too little blame. Everyone's getting blamed appropriately.
Yep. I agree.
I just don't have much.
I really don't. I'm thinking through it, and it's like everybody – we could just pound on different guys, but it's like I'm tempted to say the offensive line because on one hand, has the performance gotten a little bit better than it was before Jeff Saturday? Yes. But the worst moment to me, and it would just double up on what we've said, but the other thing I didn't bring up with the protecting the quarterback, it's the highest paid group in the league, man. Like, be those guys for your team. Be the leaders. Step out in front. And that just that group, I haven't liked their energy all season long. Just their demeanor, their approach. And actually, I'm going to exclude Quentin Nelson on this because I, even though he could have stepped up on that play, but for the most part, I think he's been very professional, has owned it, answered. You can tell he cares. And he's I've liked his demeanor this year. The rest of that group.
That is important to say. Quentin Nelson very badly wants to be good, and it very much bothers him what's going on. His own play very much bothers him.
Yeah.
That's important to note.
And he's gotten better throughout this year. He really has. I thought today, outside of he had one kind of bad bull rush against Dexter Lawrence, but he has been a guy that improved, took it upon himself, said, I'm not playing well enough, got better. When he got to the Pro Bowl, he said, it still wasn't to my standard. So I'm not excluding him from it entirely because he's had moments he could be better too, but the rest of that group has left a lot to be desired. Just the pay rates they're getting, the investment they're getting, and just the basic job that you are here to protect guys. And I've just heard enough from the defense of a lot of these defensive guys have owned this constantly this season, and they're getting a little tired of them always owning it and the offense packing their bags and being out of the locker room before we get in there. It hasn't been a great look from them. And today, the moment with Foles, I think, was kind of the most public display of that.
The one that's a mirage. Something from today's game. Something from today's game that you could extrapolate forward to something.
All right, I got one. And I don't want this to come. I feel bad, like, going in this direction. But if you think they found something for the future, quarterback of the future in Sam Ehlinger, I'm still hearing enough of that talk. And his stat line was pretty good today. He did lead a touchdown drive. If you actually look at the numbers, they were
9 of 14 for 60. I mean, that's a pretty low. It's not even a – was it 60?
I'm not sure. Last I checked, he had a rating over 100, which is shocking
with
for
the touchdown.
A Colts quarterback.
With a touchdown.
And look, it's – I've given a lot of defense to Sam this year. He's been jerked around in a way a young player never should. So I'm not making this about him. It's just anybody who's convinced that, like – you know, they've got to be playing. I got, like, people keep coming, why aren't you talking more about Sam Ehlinger and the quarterback of the future? They've got to draft that quarterback, okay? Sam told you his goal was to be a backup, developmental backup. He's still hoping to be that. He's working hard to be that. I think if that's your takeaway today, that, hey, he looked like he can play and be a backup, then I agree with you. But I'm hearing enough from people that think it's more than that. And if that's the takeaway, it's just not because, you know, even today – you know, that fourth down conversion, Michael Pittman, incredible catch, jumping backward on it. And then, you know, there's other plays that just the concerns that were there, not processing it quite early enough, not throwing the route early enough, those showed up today too. So I just think it's another one of those, kind of like the preseason, where the stats may look a certain way, but I don't think that the eye test was quite as strong on that. And, again, his hopes to be a backup, and that's fine, but that is not what they got to bank on. They got to draft the next quarterback.
Also, this is what I did look it up. 9 for 14 for 60 yards. That's 4.3 yards an attempt. That's really bad.
Oh, yeah.
That's not an effective passing game. It should be 7.5. Seven is okay. 7.5 is where it should be. 8 is really good. He's at 4.3. That's really bad.
Yeah, he had a – okay, so he had a 97.3 rating, which actually isn't even that great. By today's standards, but I saw some fans getting excited about it, and you got to move on from that. He's a developmental backup. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But that's where it is.
One that might be a Raj. Chase McLaughlin's miss. I don't know. I'm stretching here. I think Chase McLaughlin's done a pretty good job this season. The miss is going to drag his overall percentages down to the low 80s, which isn't great in today's NFL, but the 50-yard kicks, I think, 8 for 11 on 50-yard kicks, I think is still pretty good. So I'm just going to go with that. I'm having trouble coming up with anything else. There wasn't enough good or supposedly good to say it was a mirage. Like, you know, I don't know that there was anything like that, and anything that looked bad I think is indicative of where this team is. So we'll go there, and then obviously this is the last one. We always leave you guys with this one. It's one to take with you. My one to take with you is anybody out there who's saying, I don't think they can move on with Jeff Saturday. The results haven't been there.
I'm right there with you. Like, 1-6, regardless of what happens against the Texans, I mean, it's not good enough. It probably wasn't good enough even if they won today for me. To me, he had to be better than Reich with these players. He's been worse. Definitively, by record, he's been worse. When he's been able to pick his own quarterback, it's been a little bit more. It's been even more worse. So I'm with you guys on that. Now, does that mean he's not going to be the head coach? I can't tell you that, because the only person that matters in this is Jim Irsay, and Jim Irsay said a week ago that Jeff Saturday is an outstanding candidate, and he liked him enough to hire him when no one else in the NFL would have done that. So there is a chance, I think, that Jeff Saturday is the head coach going forward. If so, I think it will be because of Jim Irsay. I don't think – there's a lot of you out there saying there's no way that they're going to move on like this. I get it. I get it. I understand why you're saying that. The results aren't there on the field. They haven't been better. Totally get it. There's the question of Jim Irsay is running the team. He's going to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, Frank Reich said this one, that Jim Irsay's vote is 1-1 at the end of the day, and that's going to be true for this hire too. And I agree with that, because the thing is, today was the last chance of anything for me with that, because next week they're going to face a Houston Texans team that just got
the doors blown
off of them
by the Jaguars. Yeah,
just the worst team in football. They're trying to get the number one pick. Like, if you're going to – a lot of people talk about tanking with the Colts. They're not. They're trying really hard to win. They're just really bad. I mean, the Texans as a franchise, not the players and coaches, but as a franchise, are tanking. They're trying to get that top pick. So they're gearing this up to lose next week. So they could – the Colts could go out, and this won't happen. But even if they went out and somehow just blew the Texans out, it doesn't mean anything, because that's what's supposed to happen. This was the last day to, like, at least put up a lot of fight and have a chance.
The Texans also could still lose the first pick. If they beat the Colts and then the Bears lose their game, the Bears would get the number one pick. So the Texans have a significant amount to lose for next week.
Yep. Yeah, so I guess I'll double down on that. I don't know that I have another real takeaway from this, except I guess the other thing I kind of come back to is, like, it's done as far as, like, convincing this team it's going to work. The hope is gone. Like, today, again, it's the last effort for that, too. Today was a pride day. It was going on the road, tired, late in the season. Like, there was talk this week about, you know, some people on the outside saying this is a chance for them to be a spoiler. Like, I never got that vibe all week. First of all, it was never really plausible, but I just didn't even get that was a motivation. I don't – now, I've covered bad teams in the past that did talk that way, even though on the outside it's like, okay, sure. But, like, that's gone. And, like, no matter what they do against the bad Texans team next week, I don't think you can rein the players back in and make this make sense. Same thing with the coaching staff. So, again, like Joel said, I don't take that to mean that Jeff Saturday's not getting the job. Anything is on the table with Jim Irsay. But I do think we are past the point of this team being excited for that. They got a little bit of a lift out of beating the Raiders. You know, they got to deal with what they got to deal with. That was their coach. And they did like – and Jeff came in, very likable guy, and did relate to them as a player. But as far as it being a leader that makes sense for them and gives them any sense of hope and security, I think that's gone.
I know a lot of fans thought when they made the Saturday hire and fired Reich that they had decided – it was over. We're not going to make the playoffs. We're tanking. The players did not feel that way. Especially, Quentin Nelson said today, especially after the Raiders game, felt great in that locker room. Felt like we could build on something. DeForest Buckner said, hey, when this happened, we still had 8 games left. And look at what's happened in our division. Someone, you know, the unspoken part is someone's going to win the division at, what, 9-8? Is that right? 8-9?
8-9, I think.
So They saw a potential to get something going, and losing that, like, it's some of these guys that really care, the Buckners, the Nelsons, the leaders, like the guys who really care, like, you can see it in there, the way they talk, the frustration, the disappointment, just the hopelessness of this season. And so, yeah, I mean, it's there for this team. Like, they thought something could get done, even if the outside world didn't. And, I you know, Ursay and Ballard said that. Ballard said at that press conference, we're not throwing in the towel.
No.
Now, they've thrown in the towel by the way they played, but that's what they said. That's what they were pitching to the team, and it hasn't gone that way. And that stuff speaks to the locker room, I think.
The only way that they came within a point of the Eagles, who have pretty much handled everybody else, was how much they cared and how much they believed and how much they put into preparing and executing.
And because the Eagles shot themselves in the foot a lot too. That game.
But what I always remember is after that game, talking to Zaire Franklin and DeForest Buckner, namely on this, and how hurt they were that it was right there for the taking and one draw play, just one play where – they wish they'd been in a better defense. Gus Bradley really took that on himself for a bad call. Like that was the moment where they could have gotten to, I think, 5-5-1. If you beat one of the best teams in football, you're feeling like they really thought that there was a moment there. And then, you know, I remember it first started to splinter against the Cowboys, but really I keep bringing it up when the Vikings locker room afterward, the comments in that was the last gasp of them caring because they were officially eliminated. And it was like a realization that this wasn't working. It was getting worse, and they can't rein it back in at this point. And so, but their belief and their fire was absolutely there after the Raiders win, after the Eagles loss, even after the Steelers loss. They were right there in that game too, and mismanaged the clock at the end of it. So they always believe that's how players are wired too. They believe that you can't do the job if you don't believe that you have a chance to go to the playoffs and try and do this. But that belief is gone now because they're hurt by the season collectively. They're bothered, obviously. They're embarrassed, frankly. But they are not surprised by any of this. There's nobody that thought it was right there for the taking. Or like they knew the results that are happening in the past couple weeks are exactly what they thought would happen because that's the only outcome that a logical person would see with where they are right now.
I'm going to leave you guys with this. I'm going to leave you guys with just to drive home the point on how – if you're why evaluating on wins and losses, regardless of what happened earlier in the season, matters. I'm just going through the standings honestly, and I'm going to read off some teams that could have packed it in and aren't making the playoffs but didn't. One of them is playing in the hotel TVs right now: the Pittsburgh Steelers. Cleveland has won a couple games here.
They went and beat Washington today.
Yeah,
on the road.
Cleveland's won some games. Las Vegas was 2-7 when they beat the Colts. They're going to finish 6-10, but they won four more games. That's the point I'm trying to make. And then you get to the NFC. I mean, Green Bay is on the doorstep of the playoffs. The Detroit Lions were like 1-5, right?
I think 1-6.
And those two teams are going to play for a playoff spot next week. Washington didn't end up making the playoffs, but Taylor Heineke got them back in it. The New Orleans Saints were left for dead. They've won three straight. It's not a disaster.
Even some teams having bad years, like the Rams, they came back, had a big drive with Baker Mayfield to beat the Raiders, and then stomped the Broncos on Christmas.
There's teams that are bad that are playing still and not having what's happened to the Colts. And I think that's instructive. I think that's instructive of what we've seen in the back half of this season. Yes, the Colts were bad. Yes, they have a terrible offense. By DVOA, it's the one outlier in – of all the units in the league, but you can be a bad team and still have some good results, and the Colts haven't had those. And I think that's where I'm going to leave you guys as we head into the last week. We'll have another podcast midweek. The Texans are coming up. I do not know how to sell you on watching Colts-Texans. Short of you have season tickets and you like to go, there's a good tailgate.
Your kids are young enough that they don't quite understand any of this.
You have to be really young because my four-year-old has decided he likes the Colts, and he has been very disappointed by how many times that he's asked mom if the Colts won or lost, and they lost.
Well, the one other appeal to it, I guess, because I saw this in Detroit, it's your opportunity to voice displeasure with what's going on. This is a televised moment that ownership cares a lot about. So I saw that in Detroit where they used to – weaponize that in the worst seasons.
That's good. That's something I wouldn't have thought about.
Be upset.
But yeah, I mean, we're going to cover the team. We're going to keep looking for stuff. We're getting close here to when stuff is going to happen that really matters. Starting essentially the moment the game ends next week, and really starting on next Monday. So keep your eye tuned to IndyStar. We're going to keep churning stuff out. We've got good stuff up from today. It's almost over. That's all I got for you. It's almost over. This season's almost over. There's almost no chance it's going to be – well, I shouldn't say that. There might be a good chance it's going to be this bad again next year. But but it seems like it'd be hard for it to be this bad again next
year. It'd
be hard
for it to be wackier than this year.
It'd be hard for it to be wackier than this year. It's almost over. One more game, a game that means – it'd be hard to find a more meaningless NFL regular season game.
It's the worst offense and the second worst offense, so – if you're into points,
yay!
I know this city is blessed with the Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck offenses. This game may set you back a little bit.
For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, the First Impressions Edition, I am Joel Erickson. This has been Nate Atkins. We wish you could give you something more sunny, something more promising. Colts took it away from us.